Welcome to Ageless by Rescue. This podcast is devoted to exploring the science of rejuvenation, uncovering the most trusted experts, the must-have products, innovations, and technology in the field of vitality, aesthetics, new beauty, and cosmetic enhancement. I'm Baha Etmanen, the founder and editor of Ageless by Rescue. Ageless by Rescue gives you unprecedented access to international and Australian experts and visionaries.
Hi, it's Miranda Kerr here on Ageless by Rescue podcast.
Hi, this is Martha Kay and you are on Ageless by Rescue podcast.
I'm Trini Woodall. I mean, I feel I'm being interviewed by the sexiest woman in the world.
I'm so excited to welcome you to a really special episode of Ageless by Rescue. It's special because I have a guest that I have been following and learning from for at least 10 years, Dr. Doris Day. Dr. Doris Day is a board-certified dermatologist, a clinical associate professor of dermatology at New York University, Langone Medical Center, and a highly respected voice in aesthetic dermatology. Not only has she been recognized for her dedication and excellence in teaching, but she's also a prolific author, having penned the transformative book, Forget the Facelift, which inspires our theme today. With a rich background that bridges the gap between science and media, Dr. Day brings a wealth of knowledge on anti-aging techniques and skincare innovations. Join us today as we explore the cutting-edge treatments and preventative strategies that promise ageless skin. This is such a great episode, and I really invite you to listen to it again and again because there will be so many nuggets that you get from it each time. I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Doris Day to the show. Dr. Day, everyone knows on my show that I am obsessed with you. And so I'm so absolutely thrilled and delighted to host you on the Ageless by Rescue podcast. Welcome to Australia via the internet.
I love Australia. I have been there and I don't even know why anybody from Australia would ever leave and go anywhere else. Like, you're so well hidden and you have the most beautiful continent. And yeah, I would easily transfer myself there if I could and bring my whole family over.
I have a funny story about how I finally, as I said, I recorded a little post on my social media this morning as I was walking to the office to record. And I said, you know, I've been following you for at least 10 years. I bought your book, Forget the Facelift, which for me, the name is sizzling, you know, it's got a great catchy name, but actually what this is a Bible of everything that you can do in the aesthetics and non-aesthetic world for rejuvenation from the inside out. You even have recipes in there. You literally explain and decode every technology, every injectable, the hormone system, everything. So, you know, I read this and I remember thinking, gosh, imagine if you could really talk to consumers with this level of depth. And so throughout creating my show Ageless, you've been a real influence in the way that I bring experts onto the show. So to have you on the show is a personal thrill.
It's music to my ears. That what you say is exactly my goal, is for people to understand that there's a difference between aging gracefully and aging helplessly. And I see, it seems like women fall into two categories, and men too to some extent, where they feel like, well, doing anything is making a deal with the devil. It's sort of giving in to the culture of vanity and wanting to look good for the sake of looking good, when in reality, that's not true. In reality, we have science that has lots of mechanisms to help us age in a balanced, truly graceful way. And doing nothing is really allowing your body to degrade when we don't have to degrade in that way. We're all going to age to some extent, but I've sort of separated out getting older from aging. So getting older is chronologic. That is how much time you've been on this planet. And older is better. If you live long, that's a good sign that you've made it this far and you've lived through all your bad days and you're still here to talk about it. So that's an amazing feat. But aging is biologic. And when you hit about 30, you start to have two different ages where your chronologic age veers away for most people, hopefully, from their chronologic age. So biologically, we can be a very different number than how long we've been alive. And that's my goal. It's not just to make somebody look better, but to help them actually be better and to understand how the skin does reflect your overall health, well-being, and longevity. And new studies are actually showing that when we improve our skin quality and our skin health, that reflects inward. So it's not just that your skin reflects your age and your health and well-being, but it actually affects it. And so the influence we have is very powerful and it's very important. And it's so much more than just vanity.
It's so interesting you should say that because I think you're right. Everyone thinks that the skin is a reflection of what's going on inside, but that's a really interesting way to kind of flip that paradigm on its head to say that, you know, what we do with our skin, with the external health, will actually impact our internal organs, our lifespan, our health span. And I also love how you've separated lifespan from beauty span and functionality span and vitality span. And when I named the show Ageless and my platform is called Be Ageless, it really was about that because it doesn't matter. I've been older in my 30s than I am now. I was suffering from adrenal fatigue. I wasn't taking care of myself. I didn't exercise. I ate whatever was there just to get through the day. And now I'm infinitely more conscious of all of it, you know, what goes on my skin, what goes in my body. And so as a result, my biological age is different to my chronological age. And I can really feel that. I want to talk about something I want to get straight into a topic that we talked about just before we started recording, because for me, this is a super interesting and controversial approach. And I'll let you unveil the topic, but I'm going to preface it by saying that I had my menopause when I was younger. I was 45 and I didn't know that I'd had my menopause. So when I found out I must have had it when I was 44, because when I found out I was nearly 46. And so I'd gone through menopause. I thought I was extremely stressed and unwell, but I didn't even consider menopause might have happened. So I went and saw a doctor. I had some blood tests and she said, oh, you know, what are you doing for your estrogen levels? And I said, what do you mean? And she goes, oh, well, you know, your menopause and your estrogen levels are really low. And I didn't know. But I started going on the hormone replacement. I did bioidentical. I am on bioidentical. And the thing that was really strange is that even though I felt stressed and unhealthy in some ways, I actually looked absolutely fantastic and I had a lot of energy and I didn't put on weight. I didn't, all of the things that they talk about as being symptomatic of, and I'm just sharing my own experience.
Yes, but I love that.
But for me, it wasn't a time of decay and, you know, I still had a really healthy libido. My skin glowed, my hair was thick, it's still thick. My body didn't fall to pieces. I look great in a bikini, like better than I did in my 30s, because I'm doing other things that it wasn't just the hormonal replacement therapy. And it wasn't, I just didn't give in to that whole idea that it's a watershed, that it's a cliff that you've fallen off. And in Australia, the discussion around menopause is huge. You know, it's out of the shadows, so to speak.
Good.
So I'm interested in your take on it, because your take on it is very unique.
Well, I am so upset that women have been dealt such a raw deal. And whenever I bring up hormone replacement and menopause and perimenopause, well, I always know when someone's in perimenopause because they come in, they uniformly say the same thing. They say, one day my face just fell apart, or my face is falling apart, or I feel like I look old. And that's one of the signs that you're in perimenopause. Now, what people need to understand is that estrogen is natural. Estrogen is natural to our bodies. And because eventually we stop making it, doesn't mean we stop needing it. So many of your organs have estrogen receptors. Your brain has estrogen receptors. Your skin has many estrogen receptors. So many of your other organs do as well. And the signs of perimenopause and menopause are often nonspecific. The brain fog, the irritability, the tiredness, the joint aches, libido effects, dry skin, collagen depletion, forgetfulness, all those things are all part of perimenopause and menopause. So it's very, very treatable. Now, there was a big study that was done, and the study looked at women with hormone replacement. But unfortunately, in that study, it was very flawed. It was a longevity study. So they took women who were 10 to 20 years post-menopause. So menopause is literally a day. What defines menopause is once you have not had a period for 12 months, that's menopause. After that day, you're post-menopause. Nobody's in menopause. They're either perimenopause. They have that day of menopause when they say, on this day, I've not had my period for 12 months. And from that day forward, even if they get their period on and off again after that, they're still post-menopause. The time to start hormone replacement is perimenopause. And so many doctors in the U.S., because it's such a litigious society here, will not prescribe hormones. They'll say, come to me when you haven't had your period for 12 months. Well, you're too late. You've already start losing collagen. You've already start having so many symptoms that you didn't have to have. And you're going to play catch up or try to prevent further loss from that moment in time. But if you go to your doctor, and just like you did, who can tell you based on labs, based on symptoms, depending on the symptoms. Now, you were lucky in that you didn't have many symptoms, but sometimes those symptoms will creep up on you, like not sleeping well or not being able to stay asleep.
Well, I had the symptoms. I just didn't know what they were.
And right, exactly. They're nonspecific.
Nonspecific. And the funny thing is, the reason I was at the doctor is my aesthetic doctor, I went to him and I said, I have always had a really great jawline. And now I'm noticing a little bit of sagginess here. And my skin isn't skinning
That's
like
a good
it
doctor. Used
to. And he said, go get your bloods done.
Right. And so many women here will say, well, I don't want to do hormone replacement because of my fear of breast cancer. Now, what you have to understand is that estrogen is not a carcinogen. Estrogen does not cause breast cancer. And the women who get breast cancer, who are using hormone replacement or doing hormone replacement, they tend to be found earlier and have a better long-term survival than women not doing hormone replacement. And it also lowers your risk of uterine cancer. So doing hormone replacement helps prevent against dementia, heart disease, osteoporosis, some cancers, and other cancers found earlier, because breast tissue is naturally also has estrogen receptors. The breast cancers that do the best are the estrogen receptor positive ones. So if you live long enough, you could get breast cancer. 4 out of 1,000 women here will get breast cancer as they age with or without hormone replacement. But the ones who are using the bioidentical estrogen, those lumps may grow a little bit faster and be found earlier when they're still estrogen receptor positive and easier to treat. And that's why they have better long-term survival. So the idea that we shouldn't be doing hormone replacement, to me, is just a lot of misinformation and fear around breast cancer. And women need to understand that your risk of dying of heart disease is 10 times higher than dying of breast cancer. And hormone replacement helps against that. So the reasons to do it are so much greater than the reasons not to do it. To save your skin, your relationships, your heart, your brain, your bones, your overall health and well-being, estrogen is really an essential organ in my view, is an essential hormone in my view, and we need to pay attention to it. Now, hormone replacement alone isn't enough. Part of what I think of as protecting your skin as you age is exercise, both aerobic and resistance training. And there are really good studies that show that both aerobic and resistance training have a direct impact on your skin health and will help against the signs of aging. So as we enter peri and postmenopause, it's even more important to also take into account things like exercise. And if you're not big on exercise, any exercise will make a difference. You can just walk. If you're waiting and making your coffee, do some squats. Like sneak the exercise in, have 5-pound weights next to the TV, and on commercials, just make a deal. You're going to do one rep of 10 or 15 of those lifts in between just during the commercials of the show, and kind of build it in and make it fun and super easy for yourself. And that's how you sneak the exercise in. You don't have to go to the gym or pay money for things. Using your own body as resistance is plenty for many people.
Let me ask you, let me circle back to what you were saying about perimenopause and HRT, to not yes. wait until you've, you know, you've hit menopause and are postmenopausal. Yeah. You're a dermatologist, board certified dermatologist based in the US. When you start seeing the signs of collagen decline in your client's skin and you are starting to speak to them about more than just what you can do for them in yes. your clinics, and we'll talk about what you can do for them in a clinic.
Sure.
How do you have this conversation about, because it's quite radical to speak to someone in perimenopause about HRT.
Yeah, I just go there. I say exactly as I've been saying to you, is that, well, I believe that you're somewhere in perimenopause. I don't know where. And this is the time to get ahead of it. And these are the things you can do. And then I tell them, I'm sitting here having this long conversation with you about something that I don't prescribe. So I could be telling you just to do a treatment and just do that and get on with it. But this is so important that I'm going to take this time to have a conversation, answer any questions I have, refer you to a doctor who does it and who can follow it for you, because it's that important. And they really appreciate it. And I will tell you, every woman comes back. I give them a list of doctors that I know how to do it and believe in it, because you have to supply that as well. And they go to those doctors, they come back, and uniformly, they are so grateful. They feel better. Their relationships are better. Things that they didn't even think were bad are better. Because when you slide down that slope, you adjust. You naturally adjust. And when your thyroid goes down,
your personality has changed. Yes. The way you interact with your children has changed. The way that you interact with stress and problems has changed. You know, exactly. For a lot of people, they think it's inevitable. But you're yeah. right. It's not inevitable. It's just a sliding. No. You've slid down the slippery slope of accepting it as your fate, but it's not necessarily your fate.
No, we have science. We have techniques and technology, and there's a lot that we can do. And it's not going to eliminate it. We're still going to have some estrogen depletion. We're still going to age, but we can affect how we age by what we put in our bodies, by the way we take care of our skin, by the treatments we do that complement it. It's a multifactorial approach, but it's understanding and taking the fear out of it. This fear of breast cancer is so great for so many women that they're not willing to do anything. And the reality is that fear is based on a misrepresentation of the facts, because it was presented that a 20-something percent increase in breast cancer. But that is based on what's called the relative risk. And there's a difference between a relative risk and an absolute risk. So, for example, if I said, you're going to win the lottery, you have a 1 in a billion chance. Are you going to win the lottery? No.
Sadly.
If I double that and I say, you have a 2 in a billion chance, are you going to win the lottery?
No.
No, right? But I've doubled your chance. So with breast cancer, it goes from 4 out of 1,000 to 5 out of 1,000. So if you go from 4 to 5, it's a 20-something percent increase, but it's still about a 1% chance. So the absolute chance or absolute risk is very, very low either way. But if you look at the relative risk, then it's different. So anytime you look at the study, I always read the study itself and I look at how do they get their statistics? How do they get their number? Where are they drawing this from?
Well, we don't and do that. As consumers, we're not scientists. I mean, we might be citizen scientists, but truly we have relied on our GPs, our medical advisors, our mothers. I'll tell you something really interesting, Dr. Day. My mum never took HRT and warned me against it. Warned yeah. me. So she's now 72. It was her birthday yesterday. She's never taken HRT. She has osteoporosis. So yeah. I got her a trainer last year. So she's now doing weight training and stuff, because she absolutely categorically refuses to have anything that might be hormone related, because in her mind, that study yep. is so prevalent. And yep. she warned me against HRT. And I'll tell you what happened. When I found out I was postmenopausal, I still didn't take my HRT because I had that in my head. Right. And it took 2 years later where I was going to my aesthetic physician and saying, but I'm aging. I don't know what to do. I feel so young, but look at my skin. And he said, and she said, well, Go on HRT because it really boosts collagen. And it was the vanity. I'm telling you, that's the truth. My vanity overrode the fear that I had and also the maternal fear that had been imposed on me about HRT. And then I took it and I went, my goodness, I am so late to this party. Where was this friend that I could? And so now I tell everyone in perimenopause.
Well, the problem is that a doctor will never be faulted for not prescribing it. Because if you get osteoporosis, dementia, heart disease, that all could have been slowed, delayed, or prevented from hormone replacement, they will never be faulted or risk malpractice or anything for not prescribing it. But if they prescribe it and you get breast cancer, which estrogen does not cause, right, they have a fear of being sued for that breast cancer. So that is the problem. The problem is that even now in medical school, students are not being educated on proper hormone replacement therapy. It's still a problem to this day in current graduating medical students in the U.S. So it's a real problem. And my hope is that...
Well, it is a real problem because my GP never had these conversations with me. My aesthetic physician had this conversation with me.
Yes.
And you're a dermatologist and you're having often the very first conversations with your patients are with you.
Yes. Well, I talked to them about longevity beauty. And longevity beauty is really about biostimulation, about preservation, about enhancing and letting your body naturally enhance what it can. I really think that a holistic approach is very important. And fortunately, there is a lot that we can do that way that will help people age authentically. Because I don't know about there, but here there's a lot of overfilled, unnatural outcomes, and it's just really sad and unfortunate to see. And it happens at younger and younger ages.
I think what you said is really interesting. And one of the things I really admire about the content that you produce is that you are always talking holistic and you're talking multimodality. It never feels to me. So as an example, I never listen to something that you've put out and think this on its own is going to be the game changer. I never think that because whenever I hear you or read content that you've published or put out, you always say it in a holistic viewpoint. And I'm wondering if we can discuss some of those things. Let's talk about collagen induction because collagen induction therapy is something you're very passionate about. You speak to a lot, but you have multimodalities in your toolkit that you recommend. So once we go into that slide of collagen decline, there are a number of things that you start introducing into your patient care. Am I correct?
Absolutely. And some of it is things that you start at with young, like sun protection, and eventually adding in retinol, then peptides, some topical exosomes. And then it starts to build in things like neuromodulators that are going to affect movement that because the skin at the bottom of a wrinkle is very different than the skin at the top of a wrinkle, but not freezing, just looking at pathologic movement and trying to soften that so we can redirect the movement so that you can naturally age and sort of change the trajectory of that muscle movement to help you age younger. And then there's some fillers done carefully, picking the right ones for the right areas. I think most of the fillers, if not all of them, whether they're hyaluronic acid, calcium hydroxyl apatite, or polylactic acid, all of those fillers are biostimulatory. Some have done the homework of looking at them at a molecular level. Other ones haven't. But I see it in my patients who I've been treating for 20 years where we've been doing this and the fillers supposedly last 1 to 2 years, but they're 4 to 5 years out and they still don't need more. And the fillers, some of them are maybe a little bit there, but they must be stimulating some collagen. Otherwise, that patient would have deflated because they're older by those years and yet they don't need more and they still look balanced. So it's using the right product in the right place. And in the US, we now have close to 20 products of the hyaluronic acid class and then a few in the others that we can use the right product. So you're going to use something more robust and firm and something with, in rheology, we call it G prime, which is the stiffness of a product in an area that has less movement, or you want to create an optical lift. I don't believe most fillers actually lift, fillers fill, but if you place it in the right...
So you said that because I think it's really important to understand what technology does what. And
yes.
Filler is volumizing. It is not lifting. Right. It might, through the volumization, give a you know, yanked up. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not a lifting technology. It just isn't.
No, but in depending on where you place it, you can have the impression of a lift, which Understood. Even can have far-reaching effects. So if you do the jawline, the neck can look better, or even the cheek, the jawline can look better. And some of it is from displacement of skin itself, but it's not an actual lift. And even with volumizing, we have to be so careful because I don't necessarily want to volumize. I want to reflate. I want to smooth. Sometimes you need to volumize in someone who's very deflated and they actually need some volume. There, I really like things like Sculptra that are going to help restore your body's own natural collagen. But for contouring, for reflation, for balancing, I think the hyaluronic acid fillers are really quite good. And I think there are areas that are more complicated to treat, like the temples, where you have a functional separation. So from the eyelid to the cheek, from the cheek to the around the mouth area, from the cheek to the temples, all of these junctures need to be addressed very carefully. And unfortunately, people try to erase and those junctures. They want no lines around their mouth. They want no tear trough at all. And overfilling those areas makes you look more amorphous and often more blown up, but not younger or more youthful even, and certainly not balanced. And then there are areas that you have to be careful because they have important vessels that can go to the eyes or that can feed the skin, that if you get into those vessels, you can cause a lot of damage. But sometimes we still have to treat those areas. It's just you need somebody who gets anatomy and physiology and who has very careful technique. So the products are one thing. The way they're injected are a whole other level of understanding. And I think, unfortunately, they've become so commoditized that people will just let anybody inject or go from place to place and have different things done. And you end up looking like those Picasso mosaics where any one part may look good, but altogether it doesn't look right.
One of the big changes in Australia is that we've just had legislation that there is absolutely no mention of product. So we've always had you can never mention the brand name. But now we've gone one step further, is that you can't even use the term dermal filler or muscle relaxant or cosmetic injection. None of those. Can't say it. Doctors can't say it. I can say it because I'm not a doctor. We can talk about it because you're in the US.
So what do you think of that? Do you think that's good or not good?
Well, the logic from the Therapeutics Goods Administration for this change in legislation was to push patients and doctors into a better consultation process so that instead of going and shopping around for a new technology, you would go to your physician or cosmetic nurse. We have a big cosmetic nurse industry here in Australia, and you would have a proper, thorough consultation and then a customized plan for you that the doctor or the cosmetic nurse would devise that is just for you based on what you need, based on the toolkit they have available. And so it's now legal to show before and afters. It's now legal to use any terminology.
Kind of like that.
So that's the end goal. However, there's also the gap in that consumers don't know and often don't have the confidence to have that conversation or push back on a doctor. So I've recorded a couple of episodes about self-advocacy, and I published this podcast, and one of the key goals that I have is self-education and therefore self-advocacy, so that if you are going to a cosmetic physician and they're constantly overfilling your face and only ever using one technology and not introducing you to other modalities that could perhaps be better for the stage of aging that you're in now, you are able to ask some questions and say, have you considered biostimulators? Have you considered laser?
And devices.
Right,
exactly. I know you have different layers of the skin. You're aging from the skeleton, the ligaments, the muscles, the fat, and then the layers of the skin. They all age at different rates, and different parts of the face age at different rates. So using one modality, exactly as you said, alone, is not only not going to help, it's actually going to make you look off balance. So we started with skincare. Then we look at devices that are tightening and lifting. There's ultrasound-based ones. There's radio frequency-based ones. There's combination-based ones. I don't think microneedling radio frequency does a great job of lifting. I think it's more for texture in the skin. But some people have ones that they say help. I haven't seen much improvement from those. But there are devices, and some are better than others. The technician who's doing it also has a lot to do with it, because when you use a device a lot, you learn the technique of how to make the most of that device. So in one hand, the same device may not do as well as in another hand that's more trained. So having confidence in the person who's doing the treatment is also really important. But in my office, we always combine modalities. Everybody, we go through their skincare routine. We recommend drugstore products all the time. It's not about only using expensive products. There's lots of great options at the drugstore. And then there's areas where it pays to splurge a little bit. And then when it comes to devices, we basically just make a calendar for our patients and say, well, it's this time of year. These are the things to do. A little light resurfacing that's going to help remove some of the sun damage and dark spots. A little broadband light that can help with the redness that also helps firm the skin. But everything has a purpose that's right for that person. And that's the conversation. I don't know, by not allowing that conversation to happen online, I'm not sure that it actually achieves the goal of protecting the patient.
That is the argument that has been put forward by many a clinician and physician, is that, and I guess, you know, I'm going to continue talking about it, and I hope that, you know, whoever's watching or listening to us has the opportunity to have their interest piqued and then do their own research ahead of going and having their consultation, or immediately after their consultation, that they spend a little bit more time. I want to ask you about a technology that I often hear you speak about. It is available in Australia. I haven't had it. You talk about SoftWave a lot.
Yes.
What is it? And how do you use it?
I know you love it. I do love it. So SoftWave is, so I have other devices, and I was like, what do I need this for? I have similar devices, and you know, I buy everything in my office and I pay for everything. So nothing comes to me for free. And so I think long and hard, because these are not inexpensive devices. But when I learned about the science and the technology behind it, and I had it, I was like, okay, I need this. And SoftWave is a device that uses ultrasound energy, which is already available. But it uses it's synchronous ultrasound, parallel beams of ultrasound. And what's so amazing about it is the way that it delivers that energy really gives you lifting. It's the treatment that I do where people uniformly come back and go, my God, this really works.
Really?
And I'm so, yeah. And even after I had my fourth
one, I am now going to accept their invitation to have this treatment.
Yes, it is pretty remarkable. And there's one other device I'll tell you about that was a game changer for me and for my practice. But with SoftWave, what I love about it is that it doesn't have downtime. No, I've never once seen any fat melting, nerve damage, burn in the skin. We use it for all skin types. It's so reliably safe and effective. And most people will do more than one. But when I have my 26, 27 to early 30-year-olds come in and they want a neuromodulator like Botox for prevention when they don't have a single pathologic line, I go, not that, because you're not moving pathologically. It's not going to prevent anything because you're not moving in that way. You're not making a line to prevent. But SoftWave will help build collagen. And when you do it younger, you're actually rebuilding collagen you've damaged. And you only do it once a year at that age, or once every year and a half even. And then as you get older, if you already have some sagging, like that perimenopause, like my face is falling apart, you'll do it more. You'll do it two times, sometimes three, and then once every 9 or 10 months for maintenance. But my goal in my 60s is to still never have a facelift. So I'm hoping that forget the facelift is going to apply. But my goal is to do whatever I can that's non-surgical to try to maintain a balance. And I like being older. I'm happy to look older. None of it bothers me at all. But I want to look good and maintain a balance. That's my goal. And if I can do that, and sort of I'm aging along with my patients, if I can help do that, then it's that combination. It's neuromodulators once in a while, SoftWave once in a while, fillers once in a while, less and less often as I get older, because it does seem to last. And then also having confident friends and confidants who will tell me, okay, we need to back off the syringe or it's time to take a look.
We have luck here.
Yeah. The other device that I really love, I don't know if you have it there, but it's by Cyton. It's called the M-Joule and it's a Moxie BBL. So it's a thulium laser and broadband light. So I was having something done and a friend did it for me on my chest. And 3 weeks later, there's no ablation. So it's not burning off skin. It's heating it from deep up. And for a couple of weeks, it just looked kind of dirty. It wasn't flaky, but it just looked like it was like a little darker. And then that all came off. It just naturally went away. And the skin behind it was beautiful. I was like, oh my God, I must have this device. And I've been doing it for patients ever since.
What's it called again?
It's the Cyton Moxie BBL. The device is M-Joule, J-O-U-L-E, or M-J-O-U-L, but it's a Moxie BBL. Yeah, if they have it there, it's something I would look for. And I'm a little bit careful in darker skin types. You and I would be fine, and a little bit darker than us is even fine. But we do it for dark spots on the face. We do it
for... Could you use it for melasma?
I'm very careful with melasma. Melasma, I avoid heat as much as possible.
Yeah.
Melasma, I would use microneedling with the skin pen. Skin pen is a very specific, it's a brand of a microneedling device. And there's something called BioJuve that I use with that. They have incredible studies that are blinded. They're like really well done studies.
BioJuve skincare.
Yes, exactly. That's BioJuve.
Yeah, so I know. That was a game changer.
Skin pen. Yes, it is. It's amazing. So BioJuve are true skin probiotics. They're not gut probiotics or yogurt probiotics or whatever probiotics. They're actually skin bacteria that are the good ones, and there's no preservatives. You use it. I use it at night in my patients, and it comes with the probiotic and an activating serum, which is a prebiotic.
Oh, I wish I had it here. It's in my bathroom, so I can't show them. Yeah. But I interviewed Thomas Hitchcock on the show because I met him last year and I did a live podcast for him at Fresh Clinics. And then I saw him again at the cosmetic dermatologist conference and Cosmeticon. And I said, I have to have you on my show. We need to talk about BioJuve. We need to talk about the skin microbiome. And I'm so pleased you brought it up because I want to talk to you about
this. Well, Thomas and I wrote a book together.
Yes.
So we wrote the book, Rebooting the Biome, which
is
all about
the skin microbiome.
Yeah. So he's so great. And he's one of my most favorite people. So smart. And he created the Zycrobes that are used in BioJuve. And he's what I think is the highest compliment to anybody, but he's a total nerd. And it's what I aspire. I'm a partial nerd, but he's just a very serious scientist and very, very ethical. And the Zycropes he created in this line, BioJuve, is really quite remarkable. I use it for my acne patients. I use it for rosacea. I use it post-procedure, not immediately post-procedure, but the next day. And the data on it for helping with melasma and scarring, acne scarring is really quite remarkable. So I do a lot of, so I think that's better for melasma.
May I ask you a question with regards to skin microbiome? It's a hot topic, right? And now every skincare brand under the sun is coming forward with products. And I think what's going to be confusing for the consumer, and I'll speak on behalf of the consumer, and certainly it was my resistance on starting my BioJuve journey, which I can truly say was quite a remarkable change in my skin. After 6 weeks, it was really great skin. My skin was skinning. But I was reluctant to start the program because I was so plugged into the idea that I needed to use actives like A and C and B. And to put those away and only put skin microbiomes and probiotics on my skin and let my skin do its own thing. That was a mental kind of challenge that I had to go through. And I was sent the range by the PR of the company. And she said, look, think of it as a treatment for 6 weeks. Think of it as a booster and just use this program for 6 weeks. But it's hard for people to just use one thing.
Well, I don't do that. What I do is I have them use the serum and the activator at night.
Yeah.
And if they, I use a salicylic acid cleanser. I don't necessarily use that cleanser. Although I think that cleanser is great and people would too. Love it. So it's worth using.
Yeah.
So if somebody wants to use one line and make it super easy, there's the full line and everything in the line has the ferment, the postbiotics. So the line itself altogether is super easy. And some people just want a program. So they created that program and it's fantastic. But then I have patients who love their other products. So what I tell them is for the 6 to 8 weeks, we're going to just use the BioJuve at night by itself. So you'll cleanse using their cleanser or a salicylic acid cleanser. Then you'll do that, the serum and the activating mist, put it on the whole face. If you need a moisturizer, you can use their moisturizer. Most people don't, especially in the summer. But if you need, you can use that. In the daytime, I use their other products. I'll use a vitamin C, and then I'll use a sunscreen. I'll use any product we want in the daytime. And then at night, I'll just use that by itself because they're live microbes. You don't want to combine them with other products that either weren't tested or that have preservatives because the preservatives will kill the microbes. So, but in the daytime, you can use other things. And then at night, I've had great results with that.
And what about in the evening where you would typically use your retinol products?
I use it in the day.
So you can use it during the day.
Yeah, exactly. So most retinols, I'll look for retinols that are photostabilized. So many retinols, prescription even ones, like we have Altrino here, that's a retinol and it's FDA approved for day or night use. So there are lots of retinols that are photostabilized that can be used during the day.
Now, you are a passionate advocate of sunscreen, and in Australia, we have the highest incidence of skin cancer. And one of the things that I admire most about you is your passionate devotion to educating people that sunscreen is the first and last line of defense for good skin and health and longevity. Because if you get melanoma and die, you can have done all the other things. You are not going to live long enough to enjoy your health span and lifespan and beauty. And you believe in this so much that you jumped out of a plane for it.
Yes, I know. This is true. That was a lot of fun. Jumping out of that plane was a high, I have to say. That was exciting. And I would say you're right. It is your first and last line of defense, but not your only line of defense. In between the first and last step is being sun smart, trying to avoid midday sun. So if you're very active and I believe in spending time outdoors, I love spending time outdoors. And I think everybody should be active and physical and do it outdoors, especially if you're in a place as beautiful as Australia and you have so much outdoor beauty. But the reality is that when the UV rays are strongest in the middle of the day, they can do a lot of harm. And that cumulative effect is damaging to the skin. So wear sun protective clothing. And there's so many really great companies that make UV protective clothing that are actually cooler than not wearing clothing and certainly cooler than regular clothing. And they give you uniform protection. So protect your skin, but enjoy your time outdoors. Wear sunglasses and eat high antioxidant foods, berries, fruits and vegetables, fatty fish, olive oil, all of those provide antioxidants that do give you some protection against UV rays. And then there's a plant extract. It's a fern-based extract called Polypodium leucotomus. And that's found in products like HelioCare and Isdin Sun Pills. And those are supplements that give you a little bit of SPF or UPF or ultraviolet protection from the inside. And they have data that show that. So look for either PLE, Polypodium leucotomus extract, or look for HelioCare or the Isdin Sun Pills. Take it at breakfast and lunch when you're in a sunny climate or just at breakfast all year round, along with your sun protection.
Never heard of that piece of advice. And my goodness.
It's never going to replace it, but no, it'll add to it. Yes.
Speaking of supplements, what supplements do you recommend for that longevity and regenerative benefit? I'm curious always to speak to professionals. Everyone has very, very differentiating views on this. So I'm curious as to your perspective on supplementation.
Well, I think the critical one is vitamin D. and at least once in a while take it with vitamin K, because vitamin D is good for pretty much everything. Anti-cancer, it's good for hair, it's good for autoimmune conditions, it's great for your skin. So you need vitamin D, and don't count on the sun for providing it, because we actually don't even have data with if you have sun damage or a sunburn or just unhealthy skin or darker skin, or if you're older, how efficiently your skin will make vitamin D from UV rays. And it still has to go through your liver to, and there's a whole process of managing that vitamin D that your skin makes before it becomes active. But when you get it from foods like nuts and fatty fish and eggs, which have high vitamin D, then you actually have a more active form of it. So getting it from foods or a supplement is better. And vitamin D also helps with calcium absorption, which is why a lot of calcium comes with D. But vitamin K helps push that calcium into bones. So you need some vitamin K. And vitamin K is often made by the gut, but most of us don't have that healthy a gut. So taking it with some vitamin K can be helpful. And always speak to your doctor, obviously. So vitamin D is one that I think is super important. The other one that I think most people need is magnesium. Most people don't get enough magnesium. Magnesium L-threonate is really good at bedtime. It also helps you sleep. And if you're in perimenopause, that can be helpful. And magnesium glycinate is another good form of magnesium. And the nice thing about magnesium is you can't overdose on it. If you take too much, you'll just get some diarrhea. But these forms don't cause that problem. And usually you're not going to take that much. If we're going to take it one out from there, I think quercetin is another good supplement. It's a polyphenol, polyflavonoid that's naturally found in things like orange juice, which is really, really good. And that can help you a lot. But the thing about quercetin is it's not necessarily good to take all the time. So some things have to be pulsed. And with quercetin, some of the data of taking it every day without breaks can be unhealthy. So I would speak to your doctor about what the right dosing schedule is for you. But over the counter, I think those are the best things. There's an orange peel extract called Dimacine that helps against bruising. That's really good, that I sometimes give to people before procedures. That can help. But also if you just bruise easily as you age or you have fragile skin, that can help. When it gets into prescription things, I know rapamycin has become super popular. I'm not sure if it's the conversation there. And I've actually just helped co-found a new company, and we're working on something around that we'll be able to talk about in more detail coming up in a couple of months. We're still in stealth mode. We just started. We have a lot of safety data, but we're just starting to build the formula.
Is this with rapamycin as the core ingredient?
It's not exactly, but it's similar, and it's a novel molecule, and we'll have over the counter and prescription for skin and hair. Because hair loss around perimenopause, menopause is such a big deal that we're good. And it actually has really good data for hair. And if we get it through and it gets the FDA approval, it'll be the second FDA approved treatment for hair loss in women. And that should be about 4 years away. The over-the-counter will be about a year and a half away, but the prescription, or to 2 years for hair. And the prescription will be a few years after that because of the studies we have to do. But
what will be the difference? Will it be the dosage is the difference, or it'll be a completely different formula?
No, it'll be a different formula. Yeah, it's a different molecule and different formula. So we have a library of molecules, and we're now going through and picking ones for skin and ones for hair, and ones for over the counter too, and one for prescription. So it's a process. It's a lot of work, but it's super, super exciting. And my goal is really just to make a difference. There's so many Me Too products out there that when we have something that has really strong safety data, these molecules already have about $30 million worth of safety data orally. We're going to use the topical versions of them and develop them to impact actual skin aging, not just signs of aging. So not just the dark spots or the red or the wrinkles, but actually sort of be the general contractor that's going to come in and make the difference in how you age. So I'm super excited about that. But it's combining all these things together and always, always being curious and pushing out of our comfort zone of like what there is to what can we do better.
You mentioned earlier in the conversation topical exosomes, and exosomes have just made their way into the Australian vernacular. I've seen it a lot at the conferences that I've attended. I had my first experience with exosomes in a topical manner after I had biostimulator injections. So it was multiple injections, and then I had exosomes applied to speed up the healing. I'm curious about how you're using topical exosomes, if you've ever had any experience with injecting exosomes, and what your experience has been with the benefits to the skin health and radiance.
Yeah, so we have two topical exosomes here. We have Elevi and Plated. So Plated is platelet-derived exosomes, and Elevi is umbilical cord, Wharton's jelly-derived exosomes. So they're slightly different. And an exosome is simply an extracellular vesicle that's carrying something. So it's really just delivering a message. An exosome itself isn't anything except for a delivery mechanism. And what it's delivering is the important thing. So if you were getting a package delivery, what's in that package is important. You don't want to get a bomb because that's going to be a bad thing, right? And some exosomes are carrying bad things. We don't want those exosomes. And then some exosomes are carrying that Cartier diamond bracelet or something we really want.
I can so tell your person. We are talking the same language.
Yeah. So we want that good one. And so these exosomes, we want the Cartier of exosomes, the Ferrari of exosomes that are carrying peptides and stem cells and growth factors and all those things that are going to nourish our skin and help it age well. And so the payload of that exosome is really what we're counting on. And the reason the FDA has problems is because there really isn't a standardized thing that the FDA can say, well, we have this, this is how the exosomes are formed, this is what's in it, and this is how it's tested. It's just the wild, wild west. So injecting them is not what we do here yet. But the topical forms, I usually do it on top of CO2 lasers or microneedling.
So when the skin barrier is broken already.
Yep. And even that can be a little bit of a gray zone, but that's when I do it. And then I have them do it at home in general, just for maintenance. Even on intact skin, it has excellent results. So I'll use the exosomes, wait a few minutes, 5 to 10 minutes, and then I'll do the rest of the skincare routine. Even on my patients who do BioJuve, I'll have them do the exosomes, wait 20 minutes, and then do the BioJuve.
And do you think that exosomes are effective in a skincare preparation? Because there are a number of skincare brands with exosomes, some with plants, some with other exosomes. So umbilical cord, there's one with red deer umbilical cord.
I like that one.
Callison?
Yeah, I use that all the time. But that's not actually an exosome. I've been using Callison for years, and I love it. Love, love, love. And they have a good one for hair now as well.
It's so funny. I had the founders and the director of science from the brand on the show. Nearly
Before?
2 years ago, yes. And I also agree that that's a really exciting technology. And you're right. It's not an exosome. It's that stem cell therapy.
Yeah, it's stem cell derived from exosomes. And it's this isolated deer population in New Zealand. It's just such a brilliant concept. And I remember they sent me some years and years and years ago. And I said, okay, I'll try this. I saw the data. It looked good. He was super smart, Dr. Lim. And I put it on the patient after a CO2 laser. And they said, oh my God, that feels so good. They had instant soothing afterwards, and they had such a faster recovery, almost to the point where they thought I didn't do a strong treatment because
and
they got better.
Hurts. I mean, that's a big treatment.
And it has downtime. And they were like, wait, I healed so fast. I was out on the golf course in less than a week when you told me I was going to have at least 10 days of downtime. I was going to look horrible. And I did a full same treatment that I always did. And I know their skin, and it really did reduce the downtime, but it did two things. It made the downtime less and the results better. Who doesn't love that? So I've been doing that forever, but I use that plus exosomes now.
Okay. So back to my question, you think that exosomes in skincare, so separate to the vials of exosomes, which is what I've used on my skin, you think that exosomes in skincare is also a viable skincare booster?
I don't know. I mean, I think so. These companies are using their data, but the two that I mentioned that are here, I think they are probably also derived from exosomes. I'm not sure if they're actually intact exosomes, but the scientists behind them, like Dr. Lim, are so smart. And like Dr. Hitchcock, they're such smart scientists and they do such serious work and their data is done properly. Like to my eye, looking at their data and the way that they collected it and what their intentions are, both of these companies, Elevi and Plated, they're looking at using their technology for other organ systems, like for repairing heart damage and brain damage and other things. So this is one component of what they're doing, but they are actually looking for very life supporting medical applications as well. And I really respect the work that they're doing. So, and my patients have been super, super happy with the products. They come back and I see the difference in their skin. I know when they use it and I know when they didn't use it. Like I know the patients I recommended, they come back and I go, huh, your skin, your skin looks like it needs something. And they go, yeah, I didn't do it. I'm like, okay, well, at least I can tell.
That's so good. Just to finish off, back to the ingestibles, what are your views on ingestible collagen and also regenerative medicines such as metformin, which, so I'd love your thoughts on those.
Such great questions. So collagen, it's so funny. It's such a controversial topic here, but I don't know why. It's a protein. So just look at it as an added protein. It came down to, I think I was speaking to people from SkinAid or Liquid BioCell, and the data they showed me convinced me that at least theoretically, I get why hydrolyzed collagen could make a difference. So nobody's saying that you're going to ingest this large protein and it's going to go through your intestinal system intact and go to where your collagen is and make collagen. That's just not going to happen. Nobody believes that. I don't believe that. But what happens is it does get digested and broken down, but the pieces it gets broken down into are helpful building blocks for collagen on the other side. So it's a step closer to making collagen. And I've noticed that my patients notice improved joints, improved areas where you do have a lot of need of collagen, and their skin does look better over time. So if I think it's not doing any harm, if you don't have kidney problems, it's a big molecule, too much protein is problematic, but I haven't seen any downside to it, and you don't have to spend a lot of money. There's lots of good brands, but I would look for reputable ones, and I think SkinAid is a good one. The Nutrafol one is a good one. Liquid BioCell is a good one, and Vital Collagens is a good one as well. So there are some good brands out there.
And do you recommend marine collagen or do you recommend bovine?
No, marine collagen. I think the marine collagen is the best. It's from fish scales, which also makes it sustainable. So if you never thought fish scales had any use, we're just scaling, throwing them away, save those scales. They're actually collagen.
So you make yourself, instead of a bone broth, you would make a fish scale broth and sip on that.
Exactly. Kind of. Yeah. Right. And metformin. So metformin, actually, I covered on the news. I was a journalist before I was a doctor, and I used to do the medical news headlines for our local news station for many years. And one day the assignment was this anti-aging pill that cost pennies. And I thought this was so fascinating. And actually, after I covered it and I read the data, I started taking it. So I was taking it for about 15 years. And the data is good, but I've switched from it to Acarbose from metformin. And Acarbose is another type 2 diabetes medicine. So metformin does have a lot of value in somebody who doesn't really exercise or who has either high hemoglobin A1C or some other issues. But it has a lot of benefits in terms of what it can do because it's affecting your insulin resistance and your glycemic index. So that's just a general category of how it's helping. But it can affect your mitochondria in a negative way. So you're sort of balancing the benefits from the downside. I still think metformin is a great
negative mitochondrial effect.
Well, that it can hurt your mitochondria. So you don't want to hurt your mitochondria. Mitochondria are the energy producers of the cell, and they naturally age and don't do so well. So it can damage your mitochondria. What? So we don't want to do that. And I'm not sure how much they really do in a healthy person who is exercising and doing other things or how much damage that really is, but nobody's really looking at it either. So the upsides of metformin are definitely there. And I have so many patients who are on it for lots of reasons who are doing really well, but it can cause some GI upset in some people. Most people who keep taking it, it goes away and they can continue taking it. And there's an extended release. And there are some different formulations of it that you can get that don't cause a GI upset. But the more I started studying and listening to people like Peter Attia and reading these podcasts and reading data and the papers that they mention, I looked at a study. So there are two metformin longevity studies that are underway. One is called the TAME study. I don't remember the name of the other one. Those are going to take decades to really see the data from them, but at least somebody's looking at it. And the problem is that it's a really inexpensive drug. So there's no money in it for anybody. Yeah, no, I think it's a great drug. I, like I said, I took it for 15 years and I think it did wonders. But when we find something that might work better, I might shift up to it. So the other drug is called Acarbose, A-C-A-R-B-O-S-E. And there is some data, okay, it's not great data, and I think it's mostly in mice, I don't think it's human data, but show that the combination of Acarbose and rapamycin affected longevity and improved longevity.
Now, I think I've heard that before. I've heard about this study before, yes. And yes. It is more longevity than it is about skin health or beauty exactly. Or weight loss, which are some of exactly. The benefits of metformin.
Exactly. That's why it's not a one or the other. And metformin might be good with that as well. Mm. And again, it might also be pulse dosing. Like rapamycin is not to be taken every day in a healthy person. It's a once a week medicine. So all of these things are things for your audience to really understand that people are very seriously looking at longevity health. And the idea of longevity health is to maintain your health over time, to use what you can within what you can do, exercise, diet, lifestyle, social interactions, so important for all of this. So keeping you healthy, removing things that could be degrading your health, like inflammation, senescent cells that are cells that have done their job, but now they're hanging around just producing inflammation. And some senescent cells can be good because they can help against cancer, but too much of them will cause tissue breakdown. As we get older, they seem to accumulate. We don't get rid of them as easily as we should, which is what the product I'm making will help clear. The idea of longevity beauty and longevity health is to understand the mechanisms that are causing us to unravel and to try to minimize those and optimize how we feel so that we can go out and take better care of ourselves. It's not replacing the things that we do. It's not replacing a healthy diet or exercise or sleep or any of those things. It's going to make those things work better.
First of all, I want to thank you for your in-depth information again, and encourage absolutely anyone who's watching or listening to this episode to follow Dr. Doris Day on all social media outlets. Her content is so good, and you explain things in such profound simplicity, but also depth, which is interesting. It's a great communication skill that you have. And
thank you.
I hope that I can have you back on the show because there are so many things that I want to talk to you about. But in the meantime, there are your books that you can purchase on Amazon here in Australia. And there's, you know, your social media as well. And I want to thank you so much for being on the show, Dr. Day. It was really a pleasure and an honor.
The pleasure and honor was mine. Thanks so much for having me.
I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, please share and rate this episode. I'd love that. I'm Baha Etmanen, your host and founder of Ageless by Rescue. For more exclusive content, show transcript, behind-the-scenes video, real people reviews, and extended interviews with experts, I invite you to please follow us at Ageless by Rescue on Instagram, Facebook, and Rescue TV on YouTube. You can also sign up to receive our e-magazine and newsletters, all for free.